Hi, I'm Eric, also known as Trekkie V47, from the Ranger Command Power Hour and the Starfleet Escape Podcast. You're listening to another great Four-Eyed Radio product. For more shows, check out foureyedradio.com. It's Morphin time!
Aye! It's the Ranger Command Power Hour!
Today on the Power Hour, episode 212, Ranger Command Interview, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers 101 through 105 with Melissa Flores, recorded on March 7th, 2023. Welcome to the Ranger Command Power Hour on the Four-Eyed Radio Network. So I'm Ranger Up with your host. I'm Eric, also known as Trekkie B47. Once again, we are welcoming back Melissa Flores, best known in Ranger Nation for her work at Saban Brands and Hasbro, as well as her current work as writer, producer, consultant, and creative executive with over a decade of experience. Her most recent work is the Massiverse title, The Dead Lucky, and co-writer of Radiant Pink. She is also the current writer for Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, which started with issue 101. Welcome back to Ranger Command, Melissa.
Hello, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I am good. I am excited to talk to you guys. It's been a minute.
Yeah, it has been a minute. In fact, the last time you were on was last year when actually The Dead Lucky was just premiering.
Yes. Oh my God.
We only teased what was coming for Power Rangers. And now you've got out right now 5 issues under your belt.
Yeah. And I've written like so many more.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Like, I mean, the solicitations are up through May, at least, like with 108. So yeah. How far along are you in the process? Like, what are you doing right now?
I feel like I can't say too much without it being spoilers. I am pretty far along, I will say. I just turned in, something that I can't talk about.
And sure.
Before that, I turned in 109. And I've got an entire arc planned that I've been working with Boom on. So it goes a little ways. So it's been a lot deeper than I thought it was going to be in a good way. You know, like
for
when
sure.
I was first approached by Boom, it was for a different kind of situation that they asked me to jump on board for. And then since then, the situation morphed a little bit and morphed. And now I have the freedom to do some really fun stuff, and I'm really grateful to Hasbro and Boom for the freedom to be able to do that and for the amazing collaborators that I get to work with.
Yeah, absolutely. And now we're going to be talking about these issues. And for me, I think at least what I'm noticing, and you know, correct me if I'm wrong, the structure feels like you're pulling a little bit from like how Kyle did things, how Ryan did things, and like putting your own twist on it. And what I mean by that is like Kyle always did like those every 4 or 5 like focus issues. And in 104, we get a big Rita focus issue. And then Ryan always did like those little flashbacks to important moments at the beginning of every issue, which you also seem to be doing, at least with the first few issues of these. So how are you deciding what to pull from what was come before and balance that with your unique style and putting your own twist on it?
Well, a lot of it is also deemed by editors and people at Boom. I mean, there's, as a writer, all I have to do is write, but artists require a little more time, right? They to do the amazing work that they do, it requires a lot of time on their part. And for a monthly book, that can back up things very quickly. So a lot of those, if you notice a lot of those like special issues,
yeah,
like the Radio Repulsa issues have different artists,
right?
That is purposely designated to allow for a different artist to maybe come on board, give the other artist a break, or give them a little more time to work on what they're doing. So a lot of that is purposely constructed in the arc so that we have those moments where we allow our artists to breathe a little bit and not like kill themselves or kill their hands. But I was in a very unique situation when I came on board, and I was brought on board for a very specific reason, and that was because I knew the run. I knew the last 100 issues. I was very proprietary of the last 100 issues. I was in a very, I don't know if there's, it's a very weird position to be in because sure. I was there when the book started. I was in the room when Kyle pitched the story. Like, I feel very attached to every single event that has come through, except for obviously the last 2 years when I wasn't there. But I'm obviously huge huge fan of Kyle, huge fan of Ryan, of Marguerite, of Matt, because I was on the other side with every single one of those stories, giving feedback, talking to them, hearing their passion about what they were trying to say. So, I mean, my name was in a lot of these books already. Right. So when I came on board, it was never my intention or Boom's intention to be like, we're just going to throw that all away. Yeah. My intention was always, we're going to honor the books. We're going to honor the run, because I truly believe that when Boom Studios took that license, it and they ushered in kind of a Power Rangers creative renaissance.
Oh yeah.
When it came to how these stories were told and who they were told for. And I think that's something incredibly special that Boom had calculatedly engineered. And it was something that I really wanted to continue to work on, because truly by the end of my time at Hasbro, that was my favorite thing to work on.
Mm-hmm.
Working on the Boom books was literally the favorite thing I had to do there. And so to be given that opportunity, it wasn't one I took lightly at all. And so I was determined to make sure I honored every little bit of the run in any way I could.
Mm-hmm.
And I also was in a unique position in that I knew a lot of the franchise, right? Like that was literally my doubt. Yeah. I don't remember as much as I used to. It's been tough, but I knew a lot of the franchise. And so I wanted to have this be a true jumping on point for anybody that was like, I've got lost in the first 100 episodes. Let me see what they're doing again.
Sure.
But I also wanted to reward fans that had read the books for as long as they have with maybe little moments, a little hanging chads, right? Places where they're like, oh, I wonder whatever happened to this. Here's what happened, right? Here's an unintended consequence. And I was in a very fortunate position that, you know, even though Daphne is no longer on the books,
mm-hmm.
Kyle is no longer on the books, Ryan is no longer the books, Matt is no longer on the books, through the Massiverse and through other connections and collaborations and the fact that they are my friends and there's no bad blood anywhere because we all love each other so much, I can talk to them and it can be like, hey, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? And, you know, I mean, once in a while, I'll text Ryan or I'll text Kyle or I'll text Matt and be like, hey, this is what I'm planning on doing. And Ryan gave me a couple very specific requests that he asked for me to do moving forward. And I've tried to honor those as well. And I think they're beautiful in terms of what his characters, the characters that he had, and was like, hey, can you maybe think of doing something for this person? Cause I feel like maybe they weren't as serviced as they could have been and that sort of thing. But then I had my own agendas too, as well. I mean, there are things that I've been trying to push since the very beginning. And I know some of them are controversial, like my Trini and Zach romance, but I have loved them ever since Pink and I'm going to do it.
Yes.
So there's, and I wanted to give Aisha a love interest because I want that beautiful girl to have a freaking love interest, you know? So like there's things that I also really wanted to do. And so it kind of just marinated together into this style. And thankfully, by the time I jumped on the books, I had been writing comic books for about a year or two. So I wasn't completely new. I still think it was a complete leap of faith for Boom to take a chance on me, honestly. but I'm very fortunate that I was put in the hands of an amazing editor. And I had already been trained by Kyle, by Michael, by other people that I had worked with to be able. And then for 6 years, I had learned structure and how to create an event through Ryan, through Kyle, because I was on the other side getting those documents, getting those pitch documents and giving notes. So I was very fortunate that I had the very unique experience to be able to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't honestly know if there was anybody else that could have done that. And I'm not being cocky. I'm saying like I was in a very unique position. And so I think that's honestly what tipped the scales for me, because they're like, we need somebody that knows the lore, that knows the run. And with you, you only have to read, you know, 2 years of comic books as opposed to six for anybody else. And we, you know what Hasbro's looking for in terms of sensibilities. And so I just got lucky. And thankfully, I have enough of my own voice that I like to share. I really love the humor of Power Rangers and I love the life lessons and all that kind of thing. I think that shows in my run, but I also just, I've always loved Ryan's character work. I've always thought it was beautiful. His world building, I can't world build like he does. And I can't do action like Kyle does. And I can't do, you know, so there are things I definitely borrow from them and with their permission, I think. So
especially like with 101, setting your own pace. The first scene that opens up your run is the spell that Rita cast to force Zordon into the time warp, you know, as they're putting her in the dumpster. So was that always part of like your initial pitch? Did you have to pitch?
I did have to pitch. Yes. You always have to pitch, right? Especially for a licensee. I did have to pitch, but I will say the wonderful folks at Hasbro are definitely a lot more supportive and less inclined to push back than I was. Like, they've been fantastic. And I obviously worked with the people in publishing before, and I know exactly who they are. And they are always lovely, lovely people. And they've always been very supportive. So the pitch process, I always have to pitch everything, no matter what. But I have yet to come back with, like, there's a couple things that they're like, no, no. And I understand why. And then there's, but most of the time they, like, they give me whatever I ask for. So I can't complain. I also know what not to ask for. But yeah, the coin toss. This whole time, I wanted this story to be about Rita and her daddy issues and Mistress Vile. I knew I was going to Mistress Vile, and I knew this was so much of it was going to start with Zordon and Rita. It felt like a natural point to start the story, like just remind people this is where this conflict started. This is where it got Zordon. This is where it got Rita. And this is what Zordon is dealing with on a day-to-day basis. This, the consequence of his mercy was a lifetime of imprisonment. He wasn't the only one that was trapped in a dumpster. And that's what I really loved about that choice. And this is a Ranger-specific story, but a lot of it exists in Zordon and Rita. And for a reason. And I can't really talk too much about that reason. But obviously, you know, Mistress Vile has, like, we just had her big issue in 104, which was a deep dive in why she's doing what she's doing and how messed up she is and how she thinks that she's right and she thinks that Zordon's wrong. And so it felt like a natural jumping on point. And I was just really lucky. I've always loved that scene. There's in the franchise Bible, when I got all the documents when I first started at Saban, there was just that paragraph, and I think you can find it online, that was talking about this coin toss.
Yep.
And that was talking about how, like, Rita sprung a trap and trapped Zordon in the time warp. And I'm like, what does that look like? That doesn't look super silly. And so I just wanted to play with that a little bit. And I got to do a little bit of a spell rhymey thing because I felt like that felt very Rita. And so it was a great time. Seeing the inks for that first opening scene, I was like, yes, this was exactly what I wanted. It was very cool.
Yeah, it's awesome. And I have to give a shout out to the artist, Simona DeGianfelice. She's incredible. And it kind of reminds me of the style of Daniele or Marco Renna. It just feels like, I don't know where Boom gets these artists. A lot of them are from Italy.
I don't know what they put in the water in Italy, but they're all amazing in Italy. I don't know what's happening.
I just love that the style just seems in line with what everything has come before. I think Simona does an incredible job with the series.
Yeah. And I mean, so much of that too is, I mean, credit to the artists always, you know, they're incredible and these books would not exist without them. But I think the role of the editors in all this cannot be understated.
Oh, for sure.
You know, they work so hard at curating that talent and finding it and giving them the notes that turn those books into books that you can follow, even if the artist styles are so different. And really, it is to Daphne's credit and now Allison's credit that they curate that talent. They work really, really hard to make sure that the art works. And I'm totally grateful to them for that.
And even with the change in editors with Allison coming on board, there doesn't seem to be any obvious transition, which is a good thing. I mean, you want kind of like that smooth transition.
Yeah. And it was, again, designed with purpose, you know, by bringing me on board as somebody who had been on the run for forever and then bringing in a new editor, we're still able to have that new blood. But, like, I also was able to make sure that the tone felt the same because it was so ingrained in my memory as to what the tone used to be. So it was actually surprisingly easy to keep the tone and keep it, hopefully, feel like you're not jumping off a cliff. You're maybe just going up a different hill.
For sure. And issue 101 and 102 have a great backdrop of being set on the moon. The Rangers are attacking the moon base, trying to find out what's going on. And it's very mirroring what happened back in Go-Go Power Rangers, like issue one. So is that also by your design, kind of like a duality, kind of like reflection of the past and putting a new spin on it?
A little bit, yeah. There was a lot of reasons. It had to happen on the moon because Azeal Crystal's on the moon. And Rita wants Azeal Crystal. It also had to happen on the moon because I wanted to take Zed down a notch for a minute. And I see the complaints. People are always just like, Zed is just a punching bag at the Mighty Morphin Power. I promise we have a plan for him. But I love, love, love the Zed and Rita relationship so much. And I'm always fascinated by it because I always wonder how long they must have worked together before they got to that point where he was just like, screw you. Like he just got so far up his own butt that he'd like put her in a dumpster after her like thousands of years of service. And I feel like Ryan and Kyle had done such a good job of curating that relationship, especially Ryan in his flashbacks. Mm-hmm. And then there was always that end goal in my head, knowing like eventually they fall in love. Like, yes, she casts a spell on him, but like later it doesn't even matter because he loves her anyways. And like that, I was always fascinated by that. And so I really was, just like I was fascinated by the daddy issues that Rita has with both Zordon and Master Vile, I was always fascinated by this like twisted love affair between Zed and Rita and this like codependence that they seem to have while they hate each other and love each other at the same time. And so I put it on the moon because that is their ground zero. That is what they fight over. And like, if you're Rita Repulsa and you're a woman scorned and you're whatever he is, it's complicated, has like kicked you out mercilessly, you're going to go back and kick his ass and raise that place to the ground. And so I really wanted, like, I wanted to justify, juxtapose? You know what I'm trying to say?
The juxtaposition.
Thank you. I don't know why my mouth does not want to say it today. I really wanted the sweetness of Angel Grove and like the teenager aspect of it to really shine, and then take it to the moon and have it just be utterly horrific. Because I really wanted to touch on that with this idea of these like kids, these teenagers who have gone through 100 issues of like freaking trauma and are now, here it goes all over again. It never stops. And now it's worse because they have Matt, and Matt like wouldn't even be there if it wasn't for us. And so I kind of liked the moon for that. I really wanted like a horror kind of setting, and it wouldn't have felt the same if it was on Earth. Yeah. Moon was isolated. They're stuck. There's no way to get out. And they're also having to save Lord Zed, who is just on the edge of death. So it was very particularly tied to the moon, less because it was Go-Go and more because the moon was where everything had to take place.
Sure.
That being said, I freaking love Go-Go, and I love what Ryan did on the moon in Go-Go. And it's definitely matches together there because, you know, he did so much of his work on the moon with the Zeo crystal and with Zed and everything underneath. And so everything weaves together. But that was kind of the inspiration as to why it had to happen on the moon.
Yeah, and that's why I like these first two issues to set everything up, because you get such a great scene with the Rangers kind of having some time off because everything's been quiet after the Death Ranger, and just playing around doing the paintball exercises, trying to, you know, stay fit and ready for action. And yet they still have a plan for when, you know, the shoe drops, you know, they're ready to go at an instance. And I really like that they're working with Matt more. And I like that they're using the Promethea base instead of that little pocket dimension, because
well Matt kind of ruined that for us, didn't he?
Exactly. And so that's why I really like those moments, because there's so many times we forget that they are still teenagers and they're doing the high school thing on top of everything else. And that's why I really like the flashback in 102, just going all the way back even before Go-Go and the whole like salad girl thing, and like right after that. So as a longtime reader, as someone who's been reading it from the beginning, it brings back those memories, and it's like, man, am I going to have to read the whole run again?
I mean, I had to, like, so it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, those are the moments that I really wanted to speak to, because I just loved them so much. I mean, the salad girl thing, I was always wondering if Brian was ever going to bring that back up. The fact that Kimberly and Trini and Zach hated each other, and like suddenly they're BFFs. I'm like, when is that going to happen? and so I was like, well, if I get at least a moment, and I'm able to tie that into Matt suddenly feeling left out and being lost, then it's a win-win for me.
Yeah.
And so I got really lucky in that there was a perfect moment to be able to do that. And there were those little openings that the guys gave me. I remember, like, I was reading the issues and I was like, wait a minute. And then I started texting, I don't know if it was Ryan or like a G-chatting Matt, and I was like, did you just make the moon disappear? And like, oh yeah. Well, when's it coming back? He's like, it doesn't. Good luck. I'm like, oh, all right, then I'll figure it out. Thanks.
There's one little thing in 101, and I don't know if it tied to like one specific instance in the TV show or what, but there's the part where they zoom. I forgot, like, what? Like, Aisha and Rocky just do the zoom thing. And then Kim's like, I forgot we could do that. And I'm like, what am I looking at?
I was talking about like the teleportation, you know, when you used to see them go with will just like teleport places.
Oh, okay.
And so that's what I was referring to. Aisha and Rocky being new could be like, remembered, we could do that, because you don't see them do that very often in later seasons.
That's true.
And I'm like, they should do that more. Why don't they? That's OP as hell.
Kind of like site to site transport thing. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I'm like, why don't you know that? Did you forget? Okay.
This whole fight was just completely badass. I mean, you had Finster turn Zed's throne into a monster. Like, come on. That's crazy.
Which apparently it was already done. So I don't feel as... I don't feel as creative about that one. That already happened. I was like, yeah, this is badass. And Elson's like, this has already been done. I'm like, oh, okay. I guess we can do it again. Sorry.
And then Lord Zed getting his butt kicked. They have to run off. And Matt's got the Z staff and then goes back to protect Tommy. And it's just such a like climactic scene. And then on top of all that, you throw Serpentera into the mix.
I mean, look, if you know me at all, you know that I have like a deep abiding love. Like, it was always my goal when I was at Hasbro to try to get a HasLab Serpentera that was to scale. And I never got it done. But I freaking love Serpentera. And I just think it's so silly that they have such a big Zord that constantly runs out of fuel. Like, it's just so silly to me. And I'm like, where would this thing be? I know the next time we see it, it's buried on the moon in like Wild Force, right? So where has it been this whole time? And so the only thing I can think of, it's like still on the moon somewhere. And so I'm like, well, they need to get out and they can't teleport and they can't use their Zord. So how would they do it? Like, there has to be another Zord there. Let's use Serpentera. And like, we're not done with Serpentera. He's now in the hands of a Promethea. But I wanted an excuse. I wanted that double page where you see the scale of Serpentera. And I was so happy when I got it. It was just so much fun.
It's amazing. And obviously that issue ends with basically the vessel, which is also a new character, grabbing a hold of the Zeo crystal.
Yes.
And it's crazy because, you know, we're into 5 issues already and he's such a big mystery. So I'm very excited to see where that character goes for sure.
He's a lot of fun. I can't speak too much to him because I feel like I've given enough clues that I think some people have correctly guessed who the vessel is and where he comes from. But I really love that he just exists to be a badass. He just exists. He exists to serve Rita and exists to be a vessel. And that is literally his own purpose. And he was essentially a workaround. Like, if you notice in 104, you know, she says that the vessel is pure of heart. And that is the thing I latched on in how would she get the Zeo crystal and not kill herself. And because in MMPR season 3, they say that only the pure of heart are able to get the Zeo crystal. And so that is how she's able to get it, by making the vessel do it for her. And he's such an interesting character to me. And when you're gonna have, I don't want to spoil too much, but you're kind of like what we saw deeper into who Rita was and how she became Mistress Vile. You do get to see how the vessel becomes who he is and what that means. And that's going to come fairly soon. And so I think that'll answer a lot of questions for people. And I really actually just saw the inks for that one. And it's beautiful. Nice. Absolutely gorgeous. I'm really excited. It's a different kind of issue. Like, I was really nervous when I turned that script in, and Allison was like, this is fantastic. So I'm hoping people agree, because I really enjoyed writing that issue, but it is definitely a different kind of issue than the nonstop action than some of the other ones that are going to happen coming up.
Awesome. For 103, we kind of get that exposition now of how Rita came to the moon, how Zed got beat up. But what I like is, what you think is a flashback at first, it's essentially a mind meld between Zordon and Zed. So I do like that there's ties where Zordon calls him Zofram and tying it back to the big Eltarian war. And I think throughout this issue, like, emotions are running really high. Obviously, Kim still cares for Matt, even though you kind of dealt with that. Like Matt seems to be moving on when he asks Kim about Aisha. And I know for some people, like, the whole Kim, Matt, Tommy triangle was like a like, what are we doing here kind of situation. So I liked specifically in the issue that tensions are running high because it's not just Kim that's upset that Matt has been captured, but it's also Aisha because she was starting to feel those feelings for him. And there's just a really touching moment between Adam and Aisha. And I really, really like that moment.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, for me, what I really was trying to really convey is I'm done with the Matt Kimberly Tommy triangle. I feel like by this time it's established. Yeah. Kim and Tommy love each other. They have their own issues that they need to work on that Matt has set up, and that, you know, she doesn't want to be a ranger forever and he wants to be a ranger forever. And we know where that goes. They break up eventually and he marries Kat. So, but you don't stop loving your first love.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the love that Kimberly has for Matt at this point. She loves Matt because Matt is a good guy and Matt has grown so much. And so has she. And she genuinely loves Matt. I wouldn't say like a brother, but she loves him genuinely. Not a romantic love, but as somebody that she used to love very deeply and now loves in a different way. And I think losing Matt, knowing that she wouldn't know and she wouldn't have any of this if not for him, puts her in a really tough position because the guilt is consuming her in a really unhealthy way. And it's also consuming Tommy, and they're dealing with their guilt differently.
Yeah.
And I think for her, it also is just a little bit more of a painful thing to know that he was moving on, that he did have, like, he was into Aisha. He was ready to ask her out. And yes, it was weird a little bit, but it's actually nice to know that, you know, I mean, Aisha's her friend. She's a cool chick. And so I think it was just like they were on the cusp of something very cool, right? Being like exes that were chill. And now it's just all gone. And for Aisha, it's kind of like a different kind of purpose. I continually maintain, and this is what I love about Gogo. These are freaking teenagers with hormones. They're going to date. Yeah. Like, I don't understand why they wouldn't. And I know a lot of people are just like, I don't get the romance in Power Rangers. Why are you doing it? For me, realistically, they're teenagers.
Yeah,
they're hot teenagers. And they're gonna date, guys. Like, it is a thing. Yes, platonic relationships do exist. And that's why I have this beautiful, like, friendship moment with Aisha and Adam. Because, you know, Adam and Aisha and Rocky are this tight-knit trio that were the outsiders. And I really love to play with that. But also, you have a really beautiful girl and a really hot guy. Yeah. And they don't think each other's are terrible. Like, if they have chemistry, you want to explore that a little bit. And I saw the potential in that pairing. And I really wanted to explore it. And I think it that word, I can't say it. I can spell it. I can't say it. I don't know what's wrong with me. If you can play that first love that maybe never will be versus the old love I was ready to let go of. And now I can't because I feel guilty for what's happening. And so you're seeing two different sides of romance and the tragedy of teen romance and that it doesn't last forever.
And what I like about that is because later on in these issues, we reconnect with the Omega Rangers post the team dynamic. And now we get Zach and Trini.
Yeah.
And
oh, I've gotten some DMs about that. I tell you, people are very upset that she's over Jason.
I love it, though, because it does tie into Pink. And because Pink was that like future post Mighty Morphin kind of like alternate timey-wimey thing, if you want to get technical or whatever. But
well,
I like how it's kind of like going that direction with them.
Well, for me, I like they have. They were best friends for so long and they worked together so well and they raised a freaking kid together. Yeah. Like they, and for me, the thing, and what I loved about the way Ryan set this up and the way Ryan like had this romance with Trini and Jason that just kind of fizzled out. And then you kind of see Jason potentially trying to reach for it when he was in the middle of all that angst and then realized that Trini just wasn't there anymore. Like it was just heartbreaking to me, but like, for me, Jason was what kept Zach and Trini from truly seeing each other.
Yeah.
And with Jason out of the picture, there's nowhere else to look. They're seeing each other in that way because there's no distraction to not see each other that way. They've naturally evolved to that point where they're like, oh, hey, this is my best friend. I freaking love him. I love her. And I did like put a little bit of a teaser, like a little bit of a nugget that he had asked her out freshman year and she said no. And I wanted that because sure. I wanted to upend that idea of that guy that, you know, like only exists to be the nice guy trope, right? You know, mm-hmm. like Zach initially might have had a thing for Trini. She said no, he was okay with it. They moved on, became best friends.
Yeah.
But I loved this idea of these two finally, and I think actually that's how I wrote it in the script in that panel. Mm-hmm. I'm like, they're finally seeing each other because they have gone through so much together. They raised a kid together. It has brought them closer to, in a way that attraction has naturally developed. And now that Jason's not with them and isn't that blinder to both of them, they're able to truly explore what that would mean.
I just like the funny moment where Zach's like, wait, you dated what? Like you kissed him? What?
Yeah. I mean, I love that kind of awkward comedy. And yeah. Trini's such a straightforward character. You know, I feel like she would have, like, if anything was going to happen with Zach, she'd have to tell him
she
made out a lot with Jason. And like the fact that he hasn't found out until now was mind boggling to me. And so like, I just like, what is the most inopportune, awkward time to reveal this information? Oh, right here. This is perfect. Let's do that. And you do see Zach struggle with that a little bit.
Yeah, for sure.
Who wouldn't, right?
Circling back to issue 103, it's just such a packed issue because you almost have this moment too, going back to the moon, where you see almost like Green with Evil version 2.0 with Matt, and he's on the table with that same energy field, and you're like, how is this going to play out?
See, here's the thing. I am a big believer in twists that if you pay attention, you can see coming.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
Sure.
And I'm not a person that, like, if somebody can see where something's, if I lay the tracks and you be like, oh, we're going to C, I'm not going to be like, well, now you know where I'm going, so I'm going to go to D. Like, that was the whole freaking point.
Yeah.
And so with Matt and Rita having her do over, it makes sense to me that she would try to break him and try to turn him into, he's a Green Ranger.
He used to
belong to her. Yep. It's her coin. She wants her coin back. She wants her ranger back. She's building a freaking army. And so, of course, she's going to try to break him. Of course, she's going to try to turn him into the Green Ranger. And yeah, you can see it coming because it's the thing that she would do.
Yeah.
Now, how that executes and what happens, mm-hmm. and that all is what I hope the surprise in all of that is. Because it's in the journey, right? As opposed to the twist of, you know, Mistress Vile. And how that became, that was a true twist, right? You're not supposed to see how that happens, or even the vessel. Like, again, I'm laying tracks, mm-hmm. like, and if you can see it, great. If you can't, then it'll be a cool surprise. But like, even like Alpha One showing up at the end of that was a twist,
my God.
Right? But, but for, you know, Green with Evil, we're coming on a 30th anniversary season. And I'm also paying homage to 100 issues of Power Rangers, which started at the end of the Green with Evil arc.
Yep.
I'm going to do Green with Evil. Now, I'm going to do it a different way, but I know like people are complaining about they don't want a Green Evil 2.0. I'm like, just let me have this. It's not going to be the same. It's a different character. She's got different powers. Like, if he turns evil, if she breaks him, just let me play a little bit. It'll be okay. I promise.
For sure. And going back to this being such a packed issue, we get another scene with Grace and Zordon, and I love that they keep having these back and forth moments where, you know, she's like, oh, you let him go on the moon again. Well, and then he counters with, yeah, but you gave him the morpher.
Yeah.
Part of this is on you too.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I love Grace as a character. I think that she exists on her own as a character, but she also exists to be Zordon's conscience in a way, in a twisted sort of way. She is regret. She signifies regret, not just for herself, but for him, because for herself, she was a ranger for a freaking day. It changed her life completely. And she's been chasing that kind of power ever since, because she knows if she had it in her heart, she could do great things with it. But Zordon, who has had this power the whole time, has done jack shit because the evil never stops.
Right.
All you can do is maintain a balance. And so I really am trying to nurture that relationship, because I feel like they're at the point now where they can start to see each other as almost equals, but they have to get past all of that resentment first. And Grace is not the most forthcoming person. You know, she has secrets.
Yeah.
And Zordon doesn't fully trust her yet, and it's with good reason. And so I really wanted Zordon to have somebody to speak to as an equal. And I feel like Grace is finally at that point where she can challenge him, because she's now in the position that he was. I gave a kid a morpher. Mm-hmm. He went to the moon. He might be dead. And now, and you see that panel, and Simona just did it so freaking well, where you're just like, oh, this is what it feels like to be you. Well,
yeah, there was that beat, that like single, yeah, like those two wordless panels. Yeah.
You know, I come from the world of TV. I'm a dialogue heavy writer. And so when you don't see a panel with dialogue, it is on purpose.
Oh, for
you
sure. Know?
And so I really love how that conversation came out.
I like that, you know, continuing the Bulk and Skull characters, and, you know, because they're just so important to, yeah, you know, the universe of Power Rangers as like the non-Rangers perspective. And I like that, you know, Skull's still trying to get over, you know, his alien girlfriend and all that. But I also love that there's this moment where you get to see Jason post Omega Ranger. And I just like that little moment. How important was it for you to remind the audience that, hey, he's still out there?
I think it was really important to me, because I think Jason, if he has a journey, it's to learn. We know his journey, right? Eventually he becomes the Zeo Gold, but even that is temporary, right? And mm-hmm. and unlike Tommy, who is a ranger for the rest of his life, Jason comes and goes in stages. And I think he has to learn to deal with his present, with the feelings, with himself. And so much of that does not include the distraction of being a ranger.
Yeah.
And in Bulk and Skull, like, we see them at an interesting time, because when we start to see them in season 3, they're searching for their own purpose, right? We see them become mm-hmm. cops. We see them become this. We see them become that. They're searching for meaning in their own way. And I wanted to play those two with each other, where you started to see the affection that you eventually see in the series with these characters, as you realize, like, these guys have grown too. They're not bullies anymore. They're just trying to find their worth. Like, and that's why I say that was pre Power Rangers, right? When they were bullies and bad guys. And now, like, you know, post Power Rangers, they're, you know, trying to do good. And so for me, I wanted just that reminder, hey, Jason's there. Jason is a human. He's no less exceptional than he was, but he's not in a position of power anymore.
And there's that moment where he's in that panel, like, ready to jump in. And then he's got that smile, and he's like, they're here. Like, I love that subtle moment. Like, he's ready to go in, powers or not, he's ready to jump in still.
And that's what truly makes a ranger, right? Whether or not you have powers, or you see it over and over again, you know, when the finales come, they lose their powers. They're like, we're still going to fight you no matter what. And for Jason, it was a bittersweet moment, but also a good moment for him when he realized he doesn't have to. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have to fight them. He can go home and take care of his dad. It's not on him right now. And you do see Jason's story isn't done. You do see him come back in waves. And I wanted that outside person that, especially because things get very heavy, very, very heavy. And I wanted somebody outside of it that maybe could see the situation in a little bit of a different way.
For sure. Okay. The last huge thing of this issue that I have to talk about, Kim escalates the battle. Yes.
Yeah.
One of Zordon's tenant rules. So I know she's frustrated, but where is that coming from in this moment for her? Like, because we don't even get a moment, because the next two issues are just so packed, and it's like, go, go, go.
Oh yeah. We're not done with that. She faces those consequences. Like, she starts to get a little reckless. She breaks the rules and realizes that maybe she can get away with it until she doesn't. And honestly, a lot of it came from Matt's Forever Pink story, which was beautiful and kind of spoke to how she was feeling at the time of being a ranger. I kind of wanted to use Kimberly to kind of personify this idea that, you know, Tommy wants to be a ranger forever, but like Kimberly and Billy, like, they have other aspirations. And for her, you know, we never really see her deal with her divorced stuff. You know, you never, and now she's lost somebody incredibly important to her, who is Matt. And it feels like her fault And suddenly everything feels like a joke. And that was the whole point of that moment, because Mistress Vile like decimated Lord Zedd. They barely got out alive. Matt could be dead. And she freaking sends a monster that's saying the same crap over and over again. And they're doing the same crap where they're just like, we can't touch it. Oh, no, it's fun. And you see all the puns. And for her, I just wanted that moment where she just is freaking angry about it, where she's just like, I know how this is. I've done this for 100 episodes. I know where this is going. She's going to send her staff down and turn the monster big, and then we're gonna have to call our swords. And like, Kimberly's smart and reckless. She's not Trini in terms of calculated risk.
Mm-hmm.
And the anger gets the better of her at that moment.
Yeah.
Especially when she sees Tommy's injured still and Tommy's not out of the, and so she's just like, okay, I'm done. This is stupid, you know. Yeah. And it was a dumb teenage moment, but it starts a journey for Kimberly, and she starts to understand the consequences and starts to reevaluate her role as a ranger and what that means for her. Because I feel like she finally got a moment to breathe and have a little bit of a teen angst kind of moment where, hey, my ex-boyfriend likes one of my best friends. And like, I think like it was, I don't know if it was George or somebody, I saw a tweet that was like, Kimberly kisses Aisha more than she kisses Tommy. No, as a gay woman, I was like, really? But
in the show?
Yeah, in the show.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm like, oh. But it's one of those things where it's people she cares about being affected. And Kimberly's got she's such a freaking bleeding heart.
Yeah.
You know, and with that comes anger and rage. And she has been a ranger long enough that she knows the rules, and she knows that she can break them. And she's seen the Omega Rangers break the rules.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they stomped on Lord Zedd with the Omega.
That was actually a fight. That was a fight between me and Ryan, and where we're just like, dude, what are you doing? You know, they can't. He's like, yeah, but they're not bound by Zordon's rules. Mm-hmm. And so like, we had a whole conversation when I was on the other side about whether or not we should allow this to happen. And then, you know, we ended up trusting Ryan because Ryan's a genius, and it was great. But all of that has consequences,
right?
And so this is, again, a consequence where Kimberly is just so freaking mad. She's a teenager and she does a reckless thing and she gets away with it momentarily. And we're going to see what happens if she keeps trying to get away with it.
Nice. And then the big reveal at the end, the person who took down the red Omega Zord is none other than Alpha One.
Alpha One. Yeah, I've always wanted Alpha One back. I took the opportunity. I saw the opportunity and I took it. I could not help it. I really wanted it back.
I love this because issue 104 is Rita's issue. And I just love how it just integrates this journey for her, but also pulling things from Power Rangers universe and the one shots and just everything so far that has culminated in the story. And as a longtime reader, I love seeing all of these past moments get referenced and pulled together and weaved together because it really makes this feel like one cohesive, massive comic book universe. It's not really a question. It's just like, I really, really like this Rita issue because it felt like it tied all of these different writers' ideas and all these mini stories together.
Thank you. That's what I wanted. I respect the lore so freaking much. And I love what everybody has done with it. I mean, I love every bit of, I know like some people don't like the Solar Ranger arc. I freaking love it. You know, some people don't like the psychopath. I freaking love it. Like, there are things to love about every single bit of piece that every author puts into the world in terms of mythology for Power Rangers. And if I could have found a way to make it all work, I will. Again, very, very aware that there's a 30th anniversary coming. And in that sense, I really wanted to pay tribute to Rita and the amazing character development that she was given in this series. And so that's kind of where this whole Rita Repulsa, this is your life kind of montage moment happened. And where even the seed of the whole story is her seducing Alpha One.
Yep.
The whole kernel that came from Ryan's beautiful flashbacks where you see her picking up and you know, and Trey Moore in Finster story and like the Goldar story where you see her picking up these strays. And like the one defining quality that I love about the comic book Rita Repulsa is her loyalty to her mates.
Yep.
She was abandoned as a child and she does not abandon her own. She gives them the choices. And that's why you see Finster and Squat have stayed with her and the other two have gone with Zordon, Babu, or with Gold Zed. Is that Babu because he's a coward and Goldar because he's always been loyal to Zed.
Right.
But she raised since she was a baby and Finster has always been loyal to Rita because she's the one that picked him out when he had murdered his wife, you know? And so to be able to do that and to be able to explore beyond Earth was such a treat for me.
Mm-hmm.
I freaking love Diva Talks. She's one of my favorite villains on the planet. And I was a little thrown by the Astronema issue, the Astronema short story or the story where like you saw Diva Talks. And I'm like, how does that work when Diva Talks is here? And so it was a lot of me just like looking at these different stories and being like, how can I tie them all together and honor what everybody intended with these stories? Power Rangers Universe, I felt like was such an important piece of lore that I wanted to really make sure it tied to the main series because they brought some big stuff up that like hadn't been paid off yet. And I wanted to make sure it was to honor what they were trying to do. I wanted to make sure it was.
Yeah.
And like one of my favorite scenes that never fails to crack me up is when Diva Talks and Rita like cat fight. I don't know. It's so stupid, right? Because it's such a dumb trope that women are going to fight each other. It's just dumb as hell. But I don't know why I just burst out laughing every single time.
When they're doing those this actors, and then,
oh my God, like, and they scratch each other's faces off and they push each other away. And I'm just like, there's some history there that I want to freaking, they're frenemies. I want to see it. I want to see their meeting. And it was a question of how do we get her out of the dumpster?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, Diva Talks is a freaking space pirate. She's going to find a dumpster and be like, what's in here? And I'm like, that makes complete sense. Why wouldn't she go in there and be like, what's another man's trash is my treasure, you know? And then I was like, okay, well, how do I tie that to the story that we've seen her before? I'm like, oh, Mal, right? Like she always, Malagor was always intended to be Mal.
Right.
She's trying to find him for freaking Turbo. That's the whole point, right? Who would know where that is? Oh, Master Vile, who was working for Dark Spectre, would know what he did with Mal. So that's her payment. That little nugget of information. Okay, how do we bring Alpha One into the story so she can seduce him? And originally he was on Diva Talks' ship.
Oh, okay.
And Allison was like, he should be with Master Vile instead.
Mm,
like, what if he's the vessel? And so like, or he's the intended vessel.
Right.
Right. And I'm like, great. Two beings with incredible daddy issues that hate Zordon, they're going to find a way to love each other. And so that story just came together and it was hard. It was a hard story to write. Yeah. Like I remember turning in a draft and then Allison like noting it the f up and like being so frustrated because I had to like rewrite half of it. But like it came together. I thought like I was so proud of it when I was finished with it because everything felt like it fit. I was able to include like this little Rito nugget that I thought was like really, it's that what, like it's a two sentence line, but I feel like it changes the character of Rito. In a way, doesn't change him as who he is, but it allows you to see him in a bit of a different way and provide purpose. And it was also one of those things where I was trying to reconcile the doting dad of Master Vile that we see in season 3 with the Master Vile that we've seen in the comics. I'm like, what if that's a freaking spell? Like, what if she did that to him, you know, and like turned him into a doting dad because he was just such a terrible father that like ruined both her and Rito.
Yeah.
And that was her gift to Rito, a dad that loved him, you know? And so I was really proud and happy that it like, it just felt like all the pieces fell into place. And like, I was terrified when it first came out because it was such a big swing.
Mm-hmm.
Like I remember I was pitching this story to Kyle and Ryan. They both were like, these are some big swings, Melissa. And Michael Busidal. Did I say it right? I'm like terrible with these names. My lovely Aussie editor Michael, he was like, these are some big swings, Melissa. And I was just like, oh my God, they're gonna hate me. But like, so far it seems to have paid off. That makes me happy that people have at least trusted the road that I'm taking, because I know it's not easy for Power Ranger fans to trust. And I know some people don't like the arc, and that's completely their prerogative, but I am having a blast and I'm thankful that mostly people seem to be going along with it.
Yeah, the Rita issue just like blew me away in terms of like everything that's come before. And I know you said you had 2 years of comics to catch up on. What was that process like? Was it just like a weekend, like, oh, here I go and I'm going to take notes?
Oh, God. Yeah. I mean, that is so much, like so much of what I do. I did a short story for Marvel. It was 8 pages.
Mm.
And I read 200 pages of comics to prep for it.
Wow.
Because America Chavez is such an interesting place. And then, you know, I had to include Kate Bishop, which, you know, thankfully I was so happy that I was able to. But again, I was like, what's Kate Bishop doing now? So then I have to read her most recent run. And then there's some other characters that show up. And like, again, they exist for 2 pages. But I'm like, in order to write them properly, I have to be able to know what they're doing. And so I truly believe that if you want to do justice to a character, you have to appreciate the work that came before you. And so, yeah, I have a full-time job. I'm a writer on a project that hopefully will be announced soon and I can finally freaking talk about it. But it takes up a lot of my day. And so a lot of my nights were, thankfully, you know, the Boom team gave me everything I needed.
Yeah.
And I just burned through everything. And in about a week, because I needed to pitch.
Yeah.
So I burned through everything in about a week. And then I did a 2-page pitch of what I thought this could be. And thankfully they went for it.
Yeah, it's awesome. And then finally, we're kind of on issue 105 now.
Yeah.
I think one thing I was worried about as a reader after issue 100 is, oh my gosh, am I ever going to get to see the Omega Rangers again? So yeah. I'm glad there was that tease like, hey, the Omega Rangers are in trouble. We have to go help them. And then kind of finding out with this flashback in 105, like kind of that new status quo that we only got teased like in those last couple pages of 100. So what has been your goal with this iteration of the Omega Rangers? Because obviously they can't be the whole focus. Like they don't have their own book anymore. So
right. What
is your utilization of them going forward?
God, it's hard to say without like spoiling stuff. There are events that come forward that they are forced to work together with the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. So you don't see them off in their own narrative. You kind of see it a little bit where, you know, you see in 105 that they kind of got dragged into this with Mr. Vile and with Alpha One and all that stuff. And so that continues to be a thing. They are now part of the story. They're not off like they originally were going to go find the Death Ranger in like the far reaches of space. But now they have a different threat that they have to deal with at this moment. Mm-hmm. And so you see that journey with them. It is a lot of jumping around, but it is Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. And so we stick with our Power Rangers, but that doesn't mean we don't explore. Just like we see Jason, just like we see Matt or Rita or like Zed or all these different characters. And we take some time off to go and explore that stuff for them. The Omega Rangers have their own journey. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have Trini and Zach. Trini just trying to figure out how to be a Red Ranger.
So awesome. I'm so glad she's a Red Ranger.
Yeah. It's so funny because Allison cracked me up. Well, she I don't usually pay attention to like, I don't go to Ranger Board. I don't read a lot of things because I don't take a lot of that feedback to heart. But I also like, if you're not careful, it can affect you and how you think about
for
things.
Sure.
You know, I've seen some like bad feedback on everything I do. I mean, it's natural. Nobody's going to love everything you do, right? People have opinions and they're entitled to them.
Yeah.
But I think somebody wrote that woke writers were ruining comic books forever and because of 105. And I was just laughing because I was like, what is it about 105 that is so woke? I don't understand. It's not really great. Like, it's just, they're just fighting on some planet. Like, I don't understand. But being able to see Trini in that different role and forced to take it. And while also navigating these incredibly complex feelings for Zach and also a new ranger who's a kid. You get to see different parts of them, different sides of them that you haven't seen before. And you kind of saw a little bit of it with Journey. And so I really love this idea of Zach like mentoring Kayborn and showing him how to be a ranger and Trini trying to understand what it means to be a Red Ranger and putting her in the position that Jason was in and realizing like, hey, maybe this is why it didn't work out with me and Jason, because this is a lot of freaking pressure. And so you do see Safe Haven becomes very important and as does Earth. And so you see a lot of back and forth between those two places. And currently they're with the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers right now, kind of working towards the same goal. So the Omega Rangers continue to be a very big part of the story. They're just characters in this little play, and I don't really see them as separate at this moment.
Yeah.
Because there's not going to be time for separate. Like, there is a very big threat coming, Mistress Vile, and she is very focused on what she wants, and that's going to take a lot of attention.
This entire issue, I just really like how this sets up. It feels like 101 through 105 were like the prelude for what's to come. Like, this has all been building for the next issue. So this was one I was really happy with as someone who was worried, like, what's going to happen with the Omega Rangers? And this felt like the nice next step for them. And I really like, we get another Zord combination, and which is always, I think, pretty cool in my book, because you got these Omega Zords that are just so ancient and malleable and can change with the morphing grid and just kind of accept everything. I really like how they work together, and anytime you can throw Yale into the mix is always fun.
I freaking love you. I mean, it's so silly. It's silly in the best way. Like, there's just, it's very Meower Rangers. I freaking love it. I love that there's like a cat that's just there.
Yeah.
And it's a nice, it's an interesting challenge, because like, how do you write character development for a cat? But it's also nice that he's there and he can make cat jokes every once in a while. And then, like, you know, when somebody needs something big and fluffy to hug, there he is, that sweet kitty. So it's been a nice little thing to have in my back pocket. There's a ranger that's a cat.
For sure. So how everything is kind of left off, Promethea is able to take Lord Zedd. Alpha One is able to piece himself together. They're at a gate of one of the Morphin Masters back in the day. Again, tying the things that we saw from Power Rangers Universe and the one shot. So I really enjoy this run. And like I said, this feels like the prelude to, you know, something much bigger, and everything kind of leading up to that Dark Spectre moment. So I'm definitely really looking forward to what's coming. In fact, for everyone, 106 comes out on March 22nd. The Power Rangers and Omega Rangers join forces in an epic struggle against a friend-turned-foe. Mistress Vile's diabolical scheme also comes to a head as she possesses an object of immeasurable power and a sidekick with darker origins than the Rangers thought possible. So I'm really looking forward to 106.
Oh, I mean, I can't say too much about 106 because I don't want to spoil anything of it. But what I will say is, like, you don't want to miss it. The last page, especially, I was just like, this is exactly what I like wanted. And I was so happy I got to do it. So, like, seriously, you don't want to miss 106. It changes things immeasurably. Mm-hmm. Like you said, 101 through 105 was very much set up. But now, like, the shit's the fan. And we see the consequences of everything that has happened in a very, I think, a really fun, cool way.
Awesome. And I don't want to leave out what you're doing with the Dead Lucky and Supermassive 2 coming out. What important dates are coming up for Dead Lucky and what you're doing with the Massiverse?
Radiant Pink should come out later this month. It's something I'm co-writing with Megan Camarena, which don't know her, you should. She was Hyperforce Pink. And also, she voiced Kimberly in Battle for the Grid and Ranger Slayer. And she's an incredible talent and one of my very best friends. I love her dearly. And we're having a blast writing Radiant Pink. It might not be the last thing we write together. That's coming out. Issue 4 is coming out later this month. We're finishing up issue 5 now. Dead Lucky, The Trade, comes out March 22nd, which is incidentally my girlfriend's birthday as well.
Nice.
But that collects issues 1 through 6. And I really hope that people pick it up. And like, especially if you picked up the first two issues and maybe it wasn't for you, hopefully pick up The Trade and read the whole thing. Cause I'm really proud of this arc. I'm really proud of where we're going to go with the second arc. And it sets the stage perfectly for Supermassive too. Or it's called Supermassive, but for BB and Supermassive. And that has been a blast to work on with the guys. And it's a really fun story, and to see BB drawn by Daniele is a dream come true in a really fun, cool way. And then we're back in June with issue 7 for Dead Lucky. So, nice. It's a really personal arc for me. I obviously, if you don't know the Dead Lucky, it's another superhero book that was, honors veterans and people with PTSD in a different sort of way, and a darker, a different tone than Radiant Pink and Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, but truly a book after my own heart. I also have Women of Marvel. I have a story in Women of Marvel coming out, I think this month, actually. And I was able to see the proof of it. It's really fun and cool. And like, I got to write America Chavez and Kate Bishop. And
that's
like,
awesome.
I never thought I'd be able to do that. That's very cool. I'm really lucky that I'm able to do that. I also got to work with Oni Press on this incredible sci-fi anthology that, again, a very different kind of story that I'm used to telling, very, very Twilight Zone-y kind of based. And I forget when that's coming out. I think June, but that's coming out soon as well. So, and then everything else I can't talk about, but I'm really fortunate and lucky to be able to be doing what I'm doing. And I'm very grateful for it, but there's a lot of really cool stuff coming with Power Rangers. I will say that. I'm so grateful to the Boom team and the Hasbro team, who's also been incredibly supportive and very open with what they're doing. And I'm so glad to be able to try and support my own way. I'm going all out, guys. And some people might hate it and some people might love it, but I'm really excited for what's coming. And I hope you guys are too.
And it's the 30th anniversary. If you're not going all out, what are you even doing?
That's what I said.
But I know it's convention season coming up. Are you doing any upcoming shows? Or
I believe I forgot that I have to do that. Look, I'm there'll probably be something happen to San Diego Comic-Con.
Okay.
I think I'm supposed to go to Chicago for something.
C2E2 end of the month?
No, believe it or not, not C2E2.
What?
I think Kyle's definitely doing something at C2E2, but not me. No, it's like some library convention or something.
Oh. Okay.
I will announce it once I know for sure.
Awesome.
And I was supposed to be at Pasadena Comic Con, and unfortunately I got very sick and I couldn't go. But yeah, I want to do more conventions. I'm excited about convention season. I got so busy with my regular day job, I didn't even think about conventions. But now that I've got the trades coming, I really want to get out there, and I want people to see the work that I've been doing and to talk to people. It was so special when I was able to do it at LA Comic Con and at Power Morphic Con. And so
yeah.
I definitely want to do it. Definitely you'll see me at San Diego Comic Con for sure. I don't know what capacity yet, but I know that I'm going to be there. WonderCon, I don't have anything planned, but I'll probably go and just walk the floor because that's what I like to do. And we'll see what else comes up.
Great. Well, Melissa, it's been amazing having you on the show. And I know you have a really tight, busy schedule. So I just really appreciate you being able to come on the show and just chat about Power Ranger comics.
No, are you kidding? This is the first time I've actually been able to talk about Power Rangers with anybody on the pod, like since it came out. Like, this is a treat for me.
Oh, awesome.
Thank you for having me.
That's something I was hoping to continue to do, because I got to do that so much with Ryan, and he was so gracious with his time. So really, I'm glad that, you know, we can catch people up on, you know, what's going on with the Power Ranger comic. So I really enjoy reading them, and I really look forward to what's coming up for this run.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. And I'm like really digging your office, by the way. I'm getting distracted by
everything. Oh, thank you. Yeah. I got all new posters and everything set up.
I love it. I love the Star Trek side and then the Power Ranger side. It all works.
Thanks. Well, Melissa, once again, thank you so much for being on the show. And everyone, remember that Mighty Morphin Power Rangers issue 106 comes out on March 22nd. And we'll have links to Dead Lucky, Power Ranger comics, all of that in our show notes.
Oh my God, it comes out the same day?
Yeah.
this is my problem. I'm just like, oh really? That's exciting.
It only just occurred to me because you said the trade was coming out the 22nd. I'm like, hey, what a coincidence.
Oh yeah. Okay. Good to know. I'm just gonna write that down and I remember that. Okay.
All right. Thanks, Melissa.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to the Ranger Command Power Hour, only on the Four-Eyed Radio Network. You can catch a new episode every other Saturday. Find us on the Morphin Grid at www.rangercommand.com. Follow us on Twitter at Ranger Command PH. Like us on Facebook and Instagram at Ranger Command Power Hour. Ranger Command is also on Patreon. Become a patron by pledging as much or as little as you like every month and receive cool perks. By pledging, you are helping us make our show even better. Go to patreon.com/rangercommandph to learn more. Thanks for listening.